At the start of the campaign, I was definitely a second stringer in the Holt generation. My assignments included nailing Holt for governor signs on trees, before we knew better, trying to get people to put his bumper stickers on their cars, and handing out his brochures at rallies around the state. One of the most important rallies, then and later when I became a candidate, was the Mount Nebo Chicken Fry. Not long after I got there and began working the crowd, our opponents started to arrive. Judge Holt was running late. When his opponents began speaking, he still wasn't there. I was getting worried. This was not an event to miss. I went to a payphone and somehow tracked him down, which was a lot harder before cell phones. He said that he just couldn't get there before the speeches were over, and that I should speak for him. I was surprised and asked if he was sure. He said I knew what he stood for, and I should just tell the people that. When I told the event organizers Judge Holt couldn't make it and asked if I could speak in his place, I was scared to death. It was much worse than speaking for myself. After I finished, the people gave me a polite reception. I don't remember what I said, but it must have been okay because after that, along with my sign and bumper sticker duties, I was asked to stand in for Judge Holt at a few smaller rallies he couldn't attend. There were so many no candidate could make them all. Arkansas has 75 counties, and several counties held more than one rally. Holt's Democratic opponent in the primary was Jim Johnson. Justice Jim, as he liked to be called, was riding the tide and making big, ugly waves. He attacked Frank Holt as a pleasant vegetable and implied that the progressive Republican candidate, Win Rockefeller, had had homosexual relations with black men, a laughable charge considering his earlier well-earned reputation as a ladies' man. Justice Jim's message was simply the latest version of an old Southern song, sung to white voters in times of economic and social uncertainty. You're good, decent, God-fearing people. They're threatening your way of life. You don't have to change. It's all their fault. Elect me, and I'll stand up for you just as you are and kick the hell out of them. The perennial political divide, us versus them. It was mean, ugly, and ultimately self-defeating for the people who bought it. But as we still see, when people feel discontented and insecure, it often works. Because Johnson was so extreme in his rhetoric and largely invisible on the traditional campaign trail, most political observers thought it wouldn't work this time. As Election Day neared, Frank Holt refused to answer his attacks or the attacks from other candidates who assumed he was way ahead and also began to hit him for being the old guard machine candidate. We didn't have many polls back then, and most people didn't put much stock in the few that floated around. In the runoff election, Johnson won by 15,000 votes, 52% to 48%. At the end of the campaign, I had spoken to Jack Holt about my interest in going to work for Senator Fulbright, but I didn't know if anything would come of it. I had written Fulbright for a job the previous spring and had received a letter back saying there were no vacancies, but they'd keep my letter on file. I doubted things had changed. But a few days before I left Hot Springs to return to Georgetown, I got a call early in the morning from Lee Williams, Fulbright's administrative assistant. Lee said that Jack Holt had recommended me, and there was a job opening as an assistant clerk on the Foreign Relations Committee. He said, you can have a part-time job for $3,500 or a full-time job for $5,000. Even though I was sleepy, I couldn't miss that one. I said, how about two part-time jobs? He laughed and said I was just the kind of person he was looking for, and I should report for work Monday morning. I was so excited I could have popped. The Foreign Relations Committee under Fulbright had become the center of national debate over foreign policy, especially the escalating war in Vietnam. Now I would witness the drama unfold firsthand, albeit as a flunky. And I would be able to pay for college without any help from mother and daddy, taking the financial burden off them and the guilt burden off me. I had worried about how in the world they could afford the cost of Georgetown and daddy's medical treatments, because the year before he'd contracted cancer of the mouth and throat. Though I never told anyone at the time, I was afraid I'd have to leave Georgetown and come home, where college was so much less expensive. Now, out of the blue, I had the chance to stay at Georgetown and work for the Foreign Relations Committee. I owe so much of the rest of my life to Jack Holt for recommending me for that job, and to Lee Williams for giving it to me. On my first Monday back in Washington, as instructed, I presented myself in Senator Fulbright's office. I was told I'd be taking memos and other materials back and forth between the Capitol and Senator Fulbright's office, including confidential material for which I would have to receive proper government clearance. Beyond that, I would do whatever was required, from reading newspapers and clipping important articles for the staff and interested senators, to answering requests for speeches and other materials, to adding names to the committee's mailing list. It was easy to fit the job into my daily schedule, partly because in junior year only 5 courses were required instead of 6, partly because some classes started as early as 7 a.m. 3 of my requirements, U.S. History and Diplomacy, Modern Foreign Governments, and Theory and Practice of Communism, complemented my new work. Scheduling was also easier because although I'd been elected class president in both my freshman and sophomore years, I didn't run again for president of the class. Senator Fulbright was more liberal than Arkansas's other senator, John McClellan. He was a good Democrat who liked and supported President Johnson until they fell out over the Dominican Republic and Vietnam. He favored progressive taxation, social programs to reduce poverty and inequality, federal aid to education, and more generous American contributions to international institutions charged with alleviating poverty in poor countries. In 1946, he sponsored legislation creating the Fulbright Program for International Education Exchange, which has funded the education of hundreds of thousands of Fulbright scholars from the United States and 60 other countries. He thought politics was about the power of ideas. While Fulbright had supported the Tonkin Gulf Resolution in August 1964, giving President Johnson the authority to respond to apparent attacks on American vessels there, by the summer of 1966 he had decided our policy in Vietnam was misguided, doomed to fail, and part of a larger pattern of errors that, if not changed, would bring disastrous consequences for America and the world. In 1966, he published his views on Vietnam and his general critique of American foreign policy in his most famous book, The Arrogance of Power. A few months after I joined the committee staff, he autographed a copy for me. Fulbright's essential argument is that great nations get into trouble and can go into long-term decline when they are arrogant in the use of their power, trying to do things they shouldn't do in places they shouldn't be. He was suspicious of any foreign policy rooted in missionary zeal, which he felt would cause us to drift into commitments which, though generous and benevolent in content, are so far-reaching as to exceed even America's great capacities. He also thought that when we brought our power to bear in the service of an abstract concept like anti-communism, without understanding local history, culture, and politics, we could do more harm than good. That's what happened with our unilateral intervention in the Dominican Republic Civil War in 1965, where, out of a fear that leftist President Juan Bosch would install a Cuban-style communist government, the United States supported those who had been allied with General Rafael Trujillo's repressive, reactionary, often murderous 30-year military dictatorship, which ended with his assassination in 1961. Fulbright thought we were making the same mistake in Vietnam, on a much larger scale. Instead of seeing the North Vietnamese regime under Ho Chi Minh and their Viet Cong allies in South Vietnam as anti-colonialists who happened to be communists, the Johnson administration and its allies saw them as instruments of Chinese expansionism in Southeast Asia, which had to be stopped before all the Asian dominoes fell to communism. That led the United States to support the anti-communist but hardly democratic South Vietnamese government. As South Vietnam proved unable to defeat the Viet Cong alone, our support was expanded to include military advisors, and finally to a massive military presence to defend what Fulbright saw as a weak dictatorial government, which does not command the loyalty of the South Vietnamese people. Fulbright thought Ho Chi Minh, who had been an admirer of Franklin Roosevelt for his opposition to colonialism, was primarily interested in making Vietnam independent of all foreign powers. He believed that Ho, far from being a Chinese puppet, shared the historic Vietnamese antipathy for and suspicion of its larger neighbor to the north. Therefore, he did not believe we had a national interest sufficient to justify the giving and taking of so many lives. Still, he did not favor unilateral withdrawal. Instead, he supported an attempt to neutralize Southeast Asia, with American withdrawal conditioned on agreement by all parties to self-determination for South Vietnam and a referendum on reunification with North Vietnam. Unfortunately, by 1968, when peace talks opened in Paris, such a rational resolution was no longer possible. I watched the work of Fulbright's committee with amazement and fascination. I read everything I could, including the material stamped confidential and secret that I had to deliver from time to time, which showed clearly that our country was being misled about our progress or lack of it in the war. And I saw the body count mount, one at a time. Every day, Fulbright got a list of the boys from Arkansas who'd been killed in Vietnam. I got in the habit of dropping by his office to check the list, and one day I saw the name of my friend and classmate, Tommy Young.